Today is a great feast day, in addition to being the beginning of Advent. Today's the feast of St. Francis Xavier, who was born in 1506 in Spain. Now, from an early age, St. Francis Xavier showed a great ability in terms of study. And his parents, recognizing this, they were noble people themselves, came from means and had a good name for themselves. They saw that and they took every advantage of what their good fortune allowed them in terms of education. For Francis, he was brought up with a very strong learning as a child, and when he became an adult at 18, they sent him off to Paris to study at the University of Saint Barbara. There in Paris, he learned all the things of a higher educated person, especially the points of philosophy. And while he was studying there and grew in this knowledge, he continued having what was instilled in him from when he was young, this longing desire to further the good name of his family, this longing desire to be able to make more money and increase the wealth and the noble stature of his family. And with that, he was growing in the way of secular knowledge, but little in the way of real spiritual growth. Till one day, as Providence ordained it, there came a visitor to his university. That visitor was Saint Ignatius. And St. Ignatius at that time had not founded the Jesuits yet, but was looking to start up that community, was looking for able and willing young men to endeavor to serve our Lord in this new community, this new mode of doing so. And he came and he tried to recruit St. Francis Xavier. And St. Francis wanted nothing to do with it at that time. Remember, he was a man of learning. He was a man of noble birth. He wanted to increase his fortune and his fame. He was desirous of these things. And so he almost, not being rude to St. Ignatius, but being dismissive to him, almost scoffed at the idea of it. But St. Ignatius recognized something more in St. Francis. And so he kept saying to him, repeating over and over again, every time he brought it up, he would say, "For what shall it profit a man if he were to gain the whole world but suffer the loss of his soul?" And St. Francis said, "Yes, I understand that, but you know, this is my lot in life. I'm supposed to be a man of industry." And he would continue on and on doing that to no effect with St. Francis. Yet at that time, the heresies that came from Martin Luther were starting to ravage Europe. And they started to infiltrate their way into even the university there. And at first seeing that, he would hear these lectures, but he was told by St. Ignatius to be on guard against these errors. And as he saw them and he saw the erroneous teachings that were being put forth, he started paying more attention to the teachings of the gospel that were brought to him there, and he started paying attention to his own spiritual life more. And as he did so, that change started to come over the heart of Francis Xavier. He wanted to learn more about God. He wanted to be a better Christian. He wanted to serve God more. And in time, as St. Ignatius kept repeating in his visits with Francis Xavier, "For what shall it profit a man?" St. Francis started growing closer to that idea, finally relenting and joining St. Ignatius in that early community which would become the Jesuit order. Now, with that, his aptitude of learning still remained. He loved to study. And St. Ignatius saw that and had every intention of keeping him in this world of academia. But rather than teaching philosophy at universities and writing discourses on secular thought, he should teach theology. He should teach the faith. He should instruct students in the ways towards the priesthood. And so, after finishing his own theological studies and being ordained a priest 3.5 years after joining with St. Ignatius, he did just that. He would preach at the areas in the cities, and he would teach people the higher elements of theology. Yet with that, God had a different plan for Saint Francis Xavier. He was to abandon that whole world of academia, a more comfortable, more world, a world more at ease with itself and a steady pace, and to be substituted with the work, a great work for souls. It became known to St. Ignatius that there needed to be a mission to India started, that there are so many souls there languishing and nobody to work the fields, really. And so he agreed, and with his small number, he agreed to send two priests to India. Not St. Francis Xavier, but two other priests there. And as they prepared for that journey, one of them, by providence, fell gravely ill. And it became necessary for St. Francis to take his spot on the journey. Well, they left from where they were, and they went towards Lisbon in Portugal, to the coast, so they could prepare to leave on the ship. And they were servicing, offering religious services for people in Lisbon, especially for the royalty there. And in time, there became an obligation that fell upon his one companion for the journey, and he stayed behind in Lisbon, leaving Francis to go alone to India on the boat with these sailors. But he never balked at that idea. He went completely willingly, ready to go and work for souls. He didn't even let the journey begin before he started doing so. First off, he started by using his time wisely there in Lisbon. He made retreat for himself. He entered into longer hours of prayer. He began fasting for the good of souls that he was going to care for. Then he gets on the boat and they start to travel, and he sees all kind of the wicked ways of life of these sailors. They're Portuguese. They're supposed to be Catholics, and in name they are, but they hardly live it. And so in time and influence, Francis changes them. He works with them. Every night before the main mast of the ship, he teaches them catechism. He teaches them aspects of the faith. He teaches them the ways of morality. He corrects them for foul speech or various ways of debauchery. And they change until it's a ship filled with extremely pious men sailing towards India. Eventually, finally, he makes it to India and starts working there. Now, there are, where he lands in Goa, a few Christians already there. Some people have been converted, but only a few. And when he lands there, he sees that these few, even themselves, are a scandal to the name of Christian. They live such horrible lives, and they in no way separate themselves from the paganism of the world around them. And so he starts by teaching them how to amend their own lives and working with them, and they embrace him for it. And then he starts working with all of the pagan people of that land. He said when he landed, it was so bad that the pagans were almost no better in action than mere animals. They had rejected the natural law so much that it was as if they had put aside even reason itself. Yet he worked with them, not knowing their language, knew nothing of the language of Tamil, which was spoken in Goa at that time. Yet he had an interpreter, and he struggled actually with that area of study of languages. It took him a long time to learn, an adequate usage of the native languages of the places that he went to. Yet he was so sincere in all that he did and all that he said, and so fervent in his prayer and his sacrifice, that even working with an interpreter to help get that message across in the limited amount that he could convey, he started to convert great swaths of people, baptizing many day in and day out. Soon, because of his piety, his works were combined with miracles, great gifts from heaven itself. On one such occasion, there was a young boy who, when sleeping, was bitten by a poisonous snake and died in the night. His brother was sleeping there next to him, also a young boy, and when he had seen this, his brother dead in the morning, all purple and not moving, he immediately in tears ran and found St. Francis. He had heard about his ability to heal. And so he brought him forward and said, "My brother died, you have to do something." St. Francis was not the least bit concerned in his demeanor whatsoever. And he said, "Okay, I'll come along with you. Let's go see. Maybe he's not dead after all." And they showed up, and clearly the boy was gone and had been gone for a while because he had died earlier in the night. And St. Francis stood before him and then knelt down, made the sign of the cross, and yelled out, "In the name of Christ, I tell you to stand up." Well, the boy immediately opened his eyes, jumped to his feet as a little boy in full perfect health would, and embraced the saint, brought back to life, and his family converted to the faith. It became so frequent, St. Francis working miracles, miracles of healing, miracles of strengthening people, even bringing people back from the dead, that he couldn't work enough miracles himself. So he gathered up a bunch of his little children that were neophytes, new to the faith, and he would send them out and he'd say, "When you hear that somebody is sick, bring this crucifix to them, and then say a prayer with them and touch the crucifix to them." And all of a sudden, these little bands of children would go out and they'd start performing miracles of healing people because they were sent by this great saint for that very purpose. And so the faith grew more in India. And after a while, his work being well established there and more clergy being there to work, he set out to gain more territory, more souls for Christ. He began hopping in from island to island in the South Pacific, converting souls all the way along, eventually working his way to being in Japan and working with the pagans there in Japan, which was a very difficult task, and their beliefs there were very much opposed to Catholicism in a very violent way. Yet through his prayers, he softened them little by little, one by one, establishing mission work there until finally his own replacement came there and he set off for a new land, trying to get to some of the Chinese islands, during which point he fell ill of fever and died. His missionary career came to an end. He worked as a missionary in the fields a mere 10 years during his lifetime. Yet St. Francis Xavier was the greatest missionary, the most successful missionary, except for St. Paul. It said that he himself baptized over 3 million people in his missionary work in 10 years' time. Now, why is that possible? How is that a possible thing for him to do? Clearly, this is what makes him a great patron of missionaries. Well, if we want to understand better why he was so successful, we need to look to that other patron of missionaries that we've talked about here before, St. Thérèse of Lisieux. We've mentioned that fact about her before and how she is with St. Francis Xavier, the two patrons of that great endeavor for souls in foreign lands. Yet, St. Thérèse, of course, never left the convent. All her work was done by prayer. All her work was done by sacrifice for souls. Well, St. Francis Xavier, even though he was out there actually preaching to the people, his work began that same way, by prayer and by sacrifice. And that prayer and penance, it really does work. I want to talk to you about, quickly, what happened 2 weekends ago. I think it was 2 weekends ago at this point. When I was down in Louisiana, I was down to service the chapel down there. And I was told before Mass about a lady and her family that were going to be coming that were new to our chapel and had actually never been to a Latin Mass before. Well, they did come, and I spoke with the woman on the phone afterwards. I had to go to Dallas after Mass there in Louisiana. And so on the way, while I was driving there, I spoke to her for a while on the phone. I got to understand what brought her along in life to come to that point of showing up at our chapel in Louisiana, driving an over an hour's distance just to get there for her first Latin Mass. And she explained to me, and it was truly remarkable, no outside influence whatsoever. She had grown up rarely not practicing the faith. When she was 16 or 17 years old, her mom started going to the Novus Ordo church and started praying some more, but it really was never really a big thing in her life. Well, when she left, she went to college and kind of fell away from the faith altogether. As she put it, it was interesting. She said that I became really an agnostic there in college, but strangely, I still, even though doubted the existence of God, I still love the Blessed Virgin Mary, and I don't know why. Well, we all know what happens when somebody gives a little bit of love to Our Lady. She works grace in their souls. So this woman, she eventually married and had a couple of children, and her kids were off at school. They were just in the modern public schools there, and she saw them coming home, and with all of the garbage they were being taught there, fourth graders, second graders, being taught things that, she, as she put it, were taking away her innocence, her child's innocence. And at that, with zero faith at all, she made that important step of taking her children out of the public school, realizing their innocence is too important to protect. And with that, she also had begun reading more and realizing that the ways of modern society, the beliefs of feminism and the beliefs of the modern way of acting and thinking and the priorities of the world were really just garbage. And so she started rejecting these things. And with that, by the influence of other people that she homeschooled alongside, because they kind of, you know, people, if you homeschool, you well know, a lot of times you meet other people of like mind who also homeschool, and you talk together. Well, by talking with these people, she realized, you know what, maybe I should start practicing the faith I had brought up at least a little bit with. And so she opened the catechism book, and she started studying the catechism so she could teach her kids, and realized that she had learned so little of the faith in her life. She knew less than half of the information in the catechism, which meant she started studying the faith more and more herself. Soon, they were praying the rosary every single day. And then after 6 months, she realized that those ways of the world and that modern life had crept into her local church. And she sought to escape that. And that's where she found the traditional way of practicing the Catholic faith, the real way, the way that we all embrace and love. That person coming had zero outside influence to becoming a traditional Catholic. Yet, she did have influence of grace, influence of God moving her soul, which can only be attributed to prayers and sacrifices of others. Your prayers, your sacrifices. We've talked about the importance of being a little missionary on your own, praying for souls, offering up little sacrifices here. And I know that many of you have tried to, at least at times, embrace that. And so I bring that story forward because I have zero doubt that it's because of your good prayers and your good sacrifices joined with those of others that she herself was converted. Now, many times, those prayers that you offer, how do they work? Usually it works in the way that somebody is put into the pathway of usually a priest to talk with them and to explain the truths of the faith and to introduce them to the Mass and to eventually catechize and baptize them. That's the normal means of doing so. But every once in a while, God allows such an extraordinary case like this one woman as a sign to encourage you all to continue doing exactly that, a true miracle of grace caused by your prayers. Now, we come now to a season that allows us to do great work for souls. Advent. Advent as we anticipate the coming of the Redeemer into the world. Christ, when he came that first time, on that first Christmas, the day of his nativity itself, came into a world sunken in darkness. It's symbolic by coming in the depths of December that it is the darkest time of the year on the natural plane. But on the spiritual plane, the world was at its darkest points in that time. Yet there were still faithful then. There were still people that tried to serve God, and they prayed every single day. They prayed for the Redeemer that was promised to them to come to earth. The way for Christ was prepared for him to be successful in all that God wanted to do in planting the seeds of the faith. It was made way by those prayers of those few faithful at that time, asking for the Redeemer to come, waiting for him with expectation so that they could save their souls. That way was paved by sacrifices. It was paved by those who were influenced by St. John the Baptist to do penance for their sins, to sacrifice for others. It's the same way now. We pave the way for souls by those same means, prayer and sacrifice. And today, the world is dark again. The world stares standing before us to fight against us, to fight against God himself. But with that, your prayers will shine so brightly in that darkness. Your sacrifices will be so pleasing before God when so few are willing to offer them. And by doing so, you do great work for souls. And so Advent, a penitential season, a season of preparation, a season to prepare the way for the coming Redeemer, reminds us of that important work. If we put forth just a little extra effort during the season to be a little penitential, to not jump the gun for Christmas, to not follow the ways of the world, both in spirit and in practice, to turn back a little more often to the things of the divine, we will make great preparation for souls. We will make great pathways for more to convert. We may see them from time to time, the fruits of those prayers, but oftentimes we won't. But by our faith, we know that they happen. We know it works good. And by making a good and holy Advent season, we bring a little bit more light into this world of darkness. May God bless you, and may the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.